Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Rudrio Boys, from the Paper Trails podcast. I'm your boy Shamar here today with my co-host Mohammed, as always.
Yes, sir.
We'll be talking about another Mohammed today, a much more important Mohammed.
Can't deny that.
Absolutely, we're talking about Mohammed Ali. Now, of course, I think his greatness can't be disputed.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean, what that man did and what we'll be talking about today in this episode is going to only exacerbate that, for sure. We're going to be talking about, obviously, his up and comings, what he means to the culture, what he means to us, and obviously what he's done to change the whole landscape of the boxing game. But one thing he was very much known for was his poetry. And obviously, you had your little dibble-dabble in your spoken word time. Hey? And now here we are, of course. Mr. Mohammed.
So, mate, as I was reading that book, I was reading all the poetry.
Absolutely.
So I have to come into this episode with four lines of my own.
Damn right.
Yeah, in the podcast arena, Paper Trails reign supreme. Wow. With words that float and sting like a champion's dream. Dancing through topics, never losing steam. The greatest podcast of them all in every listener's esteem.
Jeez!
I got another one for Sharks today, but you know what? I'll say it. But then, I'll give you a little caveat after. In the podcast arena, Sharks takes the stage. But punctuality, he seems like a far-off cage. In his own time zone, Sharks pens his tale. His watch stuck in a loop, a comedic detail. But you know what? The boy, he beat the allegations today.
Yeah.
He actually came on time. He actually came early. He even gave me a call.
Yeah,
that's unprecedented.
That's what it's all about. You know, this year, I've only been late twice.
In 1 week.
Huh? 1 week? No, but you know what? I've made a pledge to become more punctual. At this age, I feel like it's ridiculous.
It's quite childish.
It's quite childish, to be fair. Yeah, you know what I mean? But obviously, the boy with the poems, how did it feel when he was writing out? Did you feel like you were Cassius himself?
No. Obviously, you don't call him I wouldn't like say that. That. You know what it was? I was trying to write something in his style. Like, because with his poetry, it's like you read through the whole autobiography and it feels so basic, innit?
Yeah.
It was like some set A poetry.
Even that,
but the delivery,
the
hard hitting words,
yeah.
He just hits it every time, innit?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't sound like, it's not like his vocabulary is insane.
Yeah, it's not like you're gonna dissect this thing to
Yeah. Like, it doesn't require an anthology book,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the way the delivery, the moments of time that he's delivering the poems, like the fact that he's doing it, he's having a big fight, and he's like, hey, instead of saying he's a bum, he's writing it in eight stanzas.
Yeah, absolutely. and even on top of that, I think for me personally, I didn't read the book. I mean, I read the book, but through the Audible, God, I announced that because the guy that was saying the poems, my word, he gave a bit more life. I feel like if you're reading it and you're saying your own
name,
it doesn't give it that.
Yeah, oomph. That's true.
The way that guy was, that performer, he's exactly.
What's his name? Do you remember his name?
No idea.
Because I was reading the book, so I was reading all the poetry in my own voice.
In your own voice, yeah, of course.
And obviously. I'm like reading it, and I'm like lounging, I think I was going to Umrah, and I was reading on the plane there. Okay. So I was like, that's like, it's not really the environment to be reading poetry. Yeah, yeah, so.
But like that guy absolutely smashes it. But yeah, like I said, we'll be talking about Muhammad Ali. The greatest, of all time in the boxing arena. And in many other ways. Mm-hmm. And obviously we'll be talking about different things that we'll be taking away from this, and obviously you guys, the listeners as well, could take away from his life as well as the autobiography. But to get into the beginning, I feel like there might be something a bit more. You want?
By the way, did we even say what we're reading? We just said Muhammad Ali.
I mean, the biography. Yeah,
it's the autobiography of Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
Co-written by, what was his name?
I saw Toni Morrison had a part to play as well.
But in this particular one, it was with, I'm just putting it up, with Richard Durham. Because it's actually important, because I think there's a few autobiographies been written by different people.
Yeah.
And even Malcolm X one is my favourite book, so I keep it local to me. Mm. I think there's a few different books, so this one forward, but this one with the assistance of Alex Haley, Malcolm X. So yeah, I think it's important to write. It was like the style of writing. You mentioned to me, because I was telling him to read it for some time.
Yeah.
So, and then you mentioned to me once you started reading, like, yo, like the style of writing here is different.
It was impeccable.
Yeah. And like that's important to know, because these co-authors are helping.
Oh, the ones that conflate all of this stuff.
Exactly.
No, I mean, even the way it was, like the way it started off, the way it kicks off, because it kicks off with him basically getting his jaw broken, and then and he's still fighting through that, and then he basically suffers a defeat. And
Ken Norton.
And then it's about like how he feels about that and what's going through his mind and all this kind of stuff, and then it kind of flips back into the past, and we kind of like, figure out where he is, how it got to this moment, because obviously I think a lot of people that know about Ali or read about Ali just know him for winning, you know. So then at this point it's like, oh snap, we started off with a loss. And it's like, okay, cool, how does he feel like in these moments? And then before we even get to too much of that, then we go to the past to figure out who he is as a person. And when I was like, wow, that beginner part there, for me, it just absolutely sold me. And then I was like, okay, cool, I need to see how this pans out and what's happening and all this kind of stuff. There were some filler moments, I feel like, in the book was just a bit longer at times. The way that it was done in terms of like a sequence, top notch. But to get to the beginning, in the early years, obviously he was he grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and then he was just, you know, pretty much, I guess, just into normal boxing,
street kid,
doing all this kind of stuff. But you know what's so crazy? Yeah, that I was thinking about like the, because there was still like that kind of segregation in America and all of that. But it was like the fact that it was so close in a way. It feels like when he's going through all of that, like it's some sort of like, he feels almost like a relic of the past.
Yeah. Like, well, he was alive while we were alive.
Yeah, like he just died 2016.
Yeah.
You know, and but it's like he's going through that part where there's like proper segregations. He can't go to certain areas.
Mm.
At a certain time, his dad's telling him to come back.
Yeah.
You can't be outside. You
go into certain restaurants. Certain story he tells about that.
No. Yeah. And it's wild. And then obviously for him, the fortunate thing was he was just really good at boxing, and he got better at as the more years went along, you know, started winning amateur championships.
You know what's funny?
Yeah.
What did he do as a kid? What did he do as a kid? What did I do as a kid?
Yeah, but... Okay, we talk about the running thing.
Yeah, he used to run around. Okay,
let's address that. So he would run. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But he would actually run because of a necessity. He would run after he would say, I'm running to school and not getting the bus, because he couldn't afford it. But because he was like, because I'm going to be a boxer and I have to do this.
Come on, man. Maybe I was saying that too.
You were just like, no, the bus is free. Nah, I'm all right. I'm just going to run for the hell of it. And it's like, all right. I mean,
but that's the funny thing. It's like when he's telling the stories of his childhood and all of these different things, like you said, segregation and all of these other race issues, the place that he lived in. It's like all of this led up to being the boxer he was.
Yeah.
And like, we're talking about pacing in the other episode where... About what's stopping us from achieving what we want.
Yeah.
And like pacing as well was another thing that he just learned. It's like he just had so many life experiences from a young age that caused him to be in the path of a boxer and have all the essential skills of a boxer.
Yeah. And to also have that relentless drive to constantly, even though he's being knocked down, to just continuously push through it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's one thing that someone's being racist to you, but it's a whole different ball game when you're a kid. And someone's just like, yo, you're different. You're not all right. You're not part of this. And you're just like, what the hell did I do to get here? And he's like, oh, okay, cool. I am different. I am like this. But
even when he starts to make it, and you know that he gets his sponsors and all that stuff, and he's telling the story about the millionaire sponsor from Louisville or whatever. He's going to sponsor him and let him stay at his house and eat and fatten him up and all that.
Yeah.
And the stories that happen in that regard as well, which is mad. They just see him as a lap dog, something like a prize trophy kind of thing.
Yeah, that's crazy. And he was even saying that it was like for him when different sponsors and that were like talking about different things, he just felt like he was being sold from one place to another place to become the prize fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the one thing about him, he was extremely, extremely talented. And then he then started, obviously, like I said, he started winning his amateur, the gold, I forget what it's called, the GCC or something like that.
Yeah.
And then obviously he got called up to go to the Olympics, which was a massive thing.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he wins in the Olympics. And then he comes back home, he's like, "Yo, I'm an Olympic winner. I've fought for like the national
America."
Blaring off the flags behind
America.
And then he comes back and he's like this, "Nah, he liked a burger and a milkshake. That's all the poor guy wanted."
Yeah.
And he's like with his brother and he's like, "Yo, today we're going to eat downtown.
We're
going to eat good today." And then he goes downtown and then they basically say, "We're not going to serve you." In a very like violent way. And then he's like, "Yo, you know what was actually crazy, huh?" So there was a part in the book where, like I said, I think maybe again it's the audible, the way the guy was saying it, really.
Now that you've told me that, I wish I listened to
it. You still could. It's phenomenal. But yeah, the way the guy was saying it, it was like, so then Muhammad Ali's like, "Yo, I fought for this country. I went to America. I was like here. I was paying homage to Louisville. Like I fought for us. I was born here. You know me. Like I'm from."
And he brought his gold medal out, which wasn't actually gold.
Yeah, he brought his gold medal out. This is after like the people were trying to kick him out of the restaurant and saying, "Yo, we don't serve your kind over here." And he's like, "Bro, look at me. Like I've done all of this for America." And then they're like, "Yeah, well, that doesn't." But he's like. But then he said in the book that he was like, "I wish I said all of that."
Mm-hmm.
But
that's the funny thing about the writing style.
Yeah.
It's like you go into a whole monologue, but he's like,
"I didn't say any of that." Yeah, and he's like, "I didn't say any of that." And I was like, "Damn, man." He was like, "It was actually silent." And he couldn't say much. Obviously, he was a kid as well. So that must have really affected him.
Yeah.
And then he had to basically escape with him and his brother after they would...
Actually escape because he was physically getting hunted down by white racists on motorbikes and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, literally. Because like they wanted his medal.
Yeah, that part felt like a film, like an action film. Like, and now I want to watch the... I think it's Will Smith, right?
Will Smith one, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't watched it though.
I remember as a kid.
Was it no good?
I just couldn't really understand it. I just knew Muhammad Ali, like just off of, I don't know, like you just know that name.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember just seeing the movie. I was just like, "What the hell's going on here?" Like I couldn't. I feel like I'd have much more appreciation for it now than I would obviously as a kid. But no, and then so now you've got this guy who's basically done all of this stuff here for America essentially, but it's still not loved by the Americans, and he can't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So then obviously later on when he's asking to be drafted and all these other kind of stuff start happening.
When the American army are trying to get into the Vietnam War.
Then it makes sense as to why he's like, "I'm not going to be fighting for this country that doesn't respect me."
Yeah.
And it's like I said, like when you read that kind of stuff, it's like you kind of forget that world existed.
Yeah.
So close.
Yeah.
You know?
60 years ago, even.
Like, just to show the straight brutality of that time, there's a guy that comes to him later on in his dressing room, and he's basically like, "Martin Luther King wanted me to see you," and they're like this, "Okay, cool, blah, 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 what's this about?" And then, because obviously, later in his years, Muhammad Ali, when he would fight, he would speak on, like, he would fight for someone, he'd be like, "This is on behalf of so-and-so." So anyways, this guy comes into his room and he takes off his top and he's got like the KKK thing on him. And then...
the brand.
He's been branded. And they're like, "What the hell?" And then he takes off his boxers and then he's basically been castrated.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "What the hell happened here?" And then he's like, "Yeah, one day I went to go get bread because I needed it for work, like lunch the next day. And then these guys jumped out of a car, 7 of them, took me to a field."
Mm-hmm.
Blindfolded me, he started beating me up, and then they were like, "You know what?
That's crazy." Yeah.
And they were like, "You know what we do to you guys? We don't want you guys to make any more like black kids." Yeah. Obviously, they weren't using the term black; they were using the term that rhymes with vinegar.
Yeah.
That's what we. This is what we do to them, and then they castrated them, and then they put it in a plastic cup, and then they took off their hoods, and then they put the blood on their foreheads as like a weird ritual. And then they just left them to basically die in the river. And I'm thinking, yo, like this is.
It's crazy.
Around the corner, and it was like.
Like our grandparents.
Yeah.
Were like adults, young adults in that age.
Yeah, and it's mad. And so, obviously, so it's like it builds to the allure of Muhammad Ali, it builds to the character of this is what he's coming up against, this is what he's fighting. Not only is he actually fighting in the ring, but he's fighting the racism and everything that's going around it.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest part is when he obviously becomes. Changes from Cassius Clay to
Muhammad Ali. When he gets known to be associated with the Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
That's when he gets...
And now, not only that, they're like, oh, yo, so you're a Muslim as well.
Muslim,
yeah, god damn it. And then, and they obviously, they viewed the Nation of Islam as like terrorists. Mm-hmm. And these backwards people that are doing madnesses to to infect the black population. That's what they're saying, but yeah, they're doing madnesses to black people, you know?
It's because it's like one of the first major movements that were like... Right, the slave trade has been abolished.
Yeah.
And then there's been a few movements to show the black people as people who stand up for themselves against the face of adversity. But then this was like one of the first ones where it was growing mass popularity throughout, and there was a clear set of, there was a clear identity change.
Yeah.
Because all the Americans, even like all the like slave descendants were mostly Christian regardless.
Yeah.
And like, well, known as Christian and visibly Christian.
Yeah.
And then when the Nation of Islam came to be known as a completely separate identity, and obviously Islam in itself, even though it's a separate thing from the Nation of Islam, that being known as like Eastern philosophy, and that being picked up by like a mass movement like that, I think that's what really like shocked the racists.
Nah,
we got to get moving
they
now.
They were like, yeah, goodness me, what on earth is... Because you were saying that the pamphlets that they would hand out, we're getting read over by like a million people a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of people, you know, that were coming in. Because obviously it was the first time that it was changing, the, like Mo was saying, the perspective. And black people were actually now starting to value themselves and keep their hair out rather than trying to straighten it. Because they were like, oh, we are black, this is how we are, this is how God intended us. And you know what I mean? And then that was obviously a massive part in his thing. So you had his upcoming, his bringing up, facing the racism in Louisville, and then him, as he was progressing more and more in his boxing thing, beats, what's his name again, Sonny Liston, and then becomes part of the Nation of Islam, and these people now hated him double. And then to add fire to that, that's when he was like, yo, I'm not going into Vietnam. And then at that point, that's just when, like,
everyone was against him.
Yeah.
Well, in America, anyway.
Yeah.
It seemed like that.
All of them were against that. And you know what? It's interesting in many regards in terms of, like, okay, it makes sense why he wouldn't want to fight for America.
Yeah, after all that.
After all of that. And on top of that, he was like, why are we going into Vietnam? Like, he didn't understand
that. Yeah, what's our fight with the Vietnamese
people? Yeah, yeah. Well, what's our quarrel with them? But secondly, it's like, he's cracking into that peak of his body, like of him, like Muhammad Ali, you know, he just defeated Sonny Liston.
Yeah,
he's become like the guy now, and then it's like he's been put into a position where they even said to him, you don't even have to go to war.
Yeah,
you know, just you don't even have to lift the
basically
gun,
put your name
mascot,
on it. Yeah,
like, just a mascot for us, just say, oh, life's good, and you know, encourage people to go to war and all this kind of stuff. You don't even have to think you could keep your world titles, because he's just won his first world title as well, yeah.
And everybody wants, all the big sponsors are like the Eddie Hearns of the world at that time are all saying, yo, like, you can make us all serious money. Everyone wants to make
you're the prize, you're the biggest prize right now. Just to go along with this, why, like, you're not going to war, just say, all right, cool, like, you just be a mascot.
I think in worldwide sports, he was probably like the biggest earner at that time as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because those guys, they would make millions a day, like, in the night, you know what I mean? So he's now, essentially, you've achieved your high, you know? You've signed,
he's out of the
football
top.
Terms, like, you've signed for Real Madrid, you could potentially win a Ballon d'Or, all this
top
kind
of top.
Stuff. But yeah, top of the top. You're getting all the sponsorships, all the marketing. You've become that guy. And then they tell you, listen, you can keep doing this, but just be a mascot. Or if you denounce it and you continue the way you're going and you keep on speaking, then you lose everything.
Yeah.
And you
strip all your titles.
Strip everything. Everything that he's worked hard for. And obviously, he took that route. You know what I mean? So it's a crazy one. For anyone.
Would you do that?
Huh?
Would you do that?
What?
So shocks it.
Listen, man, you know
what I mean? He's wearing the hat on straight away. Pointing me in the direction. You know, the marching band, the army marching band.
David, you're Vietnam. No. Nah. You know what? It's an interesting one. I think personally, because I am Muslim, that I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, we could never know.
But you can never know.
Because do you know how much money he had?
Yeah.
And the fact that that money is not just his. He's a family man. He loves. He's a man of the people.
Oh yeah.
He's supporting so many people.
Yeah.
And like that could potentially remove all that support from them as well. So he's not. You can't just think about himself. He's got his kids as well.
That's got kids as well. Yeah.
So, like, that's a crazy decision to have to make.
But not only that as well, because he knew as a boxer, you're only in it for so many months.
Exactly.
And he was.
You could lose the next fight or get injured.
Yeah. And your peak years that he had to. So he gets exiled, basically. Long story short, he decides to not go through with it. He says, "Nah, bun you guys. I'm sticking. I'm staying on business." And he does. And then they're like, "This. Well, I guess you're gonna. You're not allowed to fight anymore. You've been. I think they even took his passport at one point. They told him, yeah, you can't fight.
Anymore. Trouble.
Can't. So you can't go outside to work and all this kind of stuff and whatnot.
And I think he was banned to fight from every state apart from like one." Because they were, one of the mayors were like favorable towards him. I don't know if it was Arizona. I don't remember.
No, yeah, Atlanta.
Atlanta was.
That was, I think, towards the end.
It was like towards the end of that.
Yeah. So now he's missing out on all of his like prime time, and
that's like Messi scoring 90 goals in a calendar year, and then he can't play football for the next few years.
Yeah. And they say like, what? When's the peak for football? Like 25 to 30. Or maybe even 25 to 30. Yeah, like that whole period you can't play.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, all right, fine. And then that's when the sort of the activism route of Muhammad Ali starts to come out more, mm-hmm. and people start, because a lot of people are in favor of him, like young kids, college kids,
the youth,
the UK as well. He said a lot of people love him.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
because I knew, because like I don't know what your relationship, I want to say relationship, like what your opinion was of Muhammad Ali and your impression, but like when I was growing up. Because I knew about him, and he was the same name as me.
Yeah.
Like I held a lot of pride in that. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, that's a real role model, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think from primary school, when they asked to do Black History Month role models, I'm pretty sure like he's the first guy I put there.
No, yeah, of course, him, MLK, that's who they mainly promote.
Yeah, but like someone who's fighting, like who's a warrior, he's good with his words. Yeah. Like I was watching a lot of interviews. So the interview he did with Bertrand Russell, like the first few terms, like that was very surprising to me.
Because
the UK is not known to be like a liberal nation.
Yeah, or like promoting this kind of
stuff. Activism.
Yeah.
Like definitely now, imagine in this day and age, like they would be slandering him the way they did Diane Abbott.
Like
that's, but it's not like he's a British citizen, he's an American citizen.
No, of course. And they showed him like hella love,
mm-hmm.
which he really, really appreciated. And obviously it made sense. I think with Muhammad Ali, it was just kind of, for me, I had that, so more affiliation,
mm-hmm.
because he was Muslim,
mm-hmm.
So when I heard the name, I'm like, oh, a Muslim guy doing all of this,
yeah,
what the hell. But I think one thing, the stigma that he was also breaking was that a lot of white people then actually fought with their whole hearts that black people are ignorant, like
ignorant, like, small brains,
brains. And they were like these weird scientists that were like, the skull is made different to be dumber or something. Like people actually believe this stuff. So not only is he doing all this stuff here, but I think the biggest thing about him was he was an excellent marketer.
Yeah, like, charisma on deck.
His marketing levels, I think that's what a lot of these guys like Conor McGregor, now Jake Paul, they tried to do, because he understood very, very early on that people want, you have to get people to want to see you, mm-hmm. either get beat up or to win.
Mm-hmm.
And in his case, people, he would be constantly bragging. Imagine he's fighting you.
Yeah.
He's like, this Mo Imam, I'm knocking him out in the fifth round.
Yeah.
And he's not going to make it. All this kind of stuff. He's like,
rhyming.
He's rhyming. He's cooking you the whole time.
Yeah.
It's something that these guys I never saw. Usually boxers were like, we're looking forward to the fight, and hopefully it's a good battle.
Especially black boxers. He talked about it many times, about the black boxers he faced being Uncle Tom's, many of them.
And he's calling out, you Uncle Tom, you ignorant, you're this, and he's cooking these guys. Yeah. So now it gets to a point where even the white people are like, yo, when will someone knock this guy out? And he's constantly telling them, I'm going to knock me out.
Imagine from a racist point of view, this guy keeps on chatting bare ass, and he's just smacking everyone one by one.
Especially the white boxers, they try to bring in these heroes that they call them, you know, their savior. But then
you'll take that monster out.
Yeah. But then he would beat them, and you know what? he must have been hella insufferable.
In the round that he predicts repeatedly.
Yeah. Like I said, even for Conor McGregor, that's what he would do initially. He would be like, they called him Mystic Mac, because he would be like, I'm going to knock this guy out second round.
Yeah.
I'm Mystic Mac. I'm knocking out. Yeah. That kind of stuff. And then he would do it.
I feel like he was more respected then as well, McGregor.
Who?
McGregor. Until he lost.
Oh, yeah. He was the biggest.
Yeah, yeah.
He took them to a $1 billion company.
But like, it's the way, it's just funny to see like the impression of the boxer or the fighter until they lose. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like,
he's like, you're not so special.
Yeah.
Like, the bubble bursts.
Yeah. You know, like, I wish I could have seen like Muhammad Ali alive at that point.
At that point where no one's beating him.
Yeah.
He's on track for like 30 and 0 or something, you know? So he's like
heavyweight.
You know, he hasn't lost at all. And I think his character, in terms of like the insufferability at times, just honestly reminded me of my friend who also shares his name. Maybe it's suffered in the name, man. That guy there, you know what I mean? Whoever you're playing FIFA, whatever it is, his level of confidence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even in his football ability, I've never seen anyone else talk about himself. He'll walk into a room talking about himself. But no, that guy, yeah.
Well, he'll back it up.
He'll back it up. And that's what it is. But even like I was saying, his level of marketing, where I don't know who it was, I think it was Liston or something, where he basically rounds up his boys, he calls up the reporters, and he's like, and the police, they're like, come to his house, I'm gonna be over there.
Yeah.
And he drives to the guy's house, and he's like shouting at him from the room, and he's like, this, what you gonna do? Oh, whoop you, all of this kind of stuff. And then the reporters and the police come just in time when the guy's at the door, and then he gets back in his car and he's shouting back. He's like, this, let the reporters know that Muhammad Ali came to his house to whoop him.
But he stayed inside.
And he stayed inside. And we got to get this guy, you know what I mean? So obviously...
His marketing.
I don't think anyone did that at the time. Now, very standard. This is, if you want to make it, you've got to have
outside the box, a reason why
people want to see you fight. But I think at that time...
To this day, I don't think there's been a sportsman as charismatic as him at all.
Maybe, but I think Conor McGregor was up there.
Oh, man, don't compare the two.
No, you can't compare the two. I'm saying in terms of like money fights.
Bringing in money. Yeah.
I think what McGregor did in his like time was, you know what I mean, out of this.
Yeah, he built a sport.
Yeah.
And that's a commendable act itself.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man.
But no one can beat Muhammad Ali. Even he looked up to Muhammad Ali.
There was another thing as well where... Was it George Foreman? Who was it that he was in the car with?
Oh, Joe Frazier.
Frazier. Yeah. When they basically like staged a mock fight, like, oh, they're gonna fight out in the park because he doesn't have his license, he can't fight right now, so they're gonna beef it out in the park, innit? And then like I don't know how many thousands he said came to watch.
Yeah,
like an unpublicized fight with no promoters and nothing. Like that's the kind of
almost 20,000.
Yeah,
almost filled the park.
That's insane. Imagine that, just from word of mouth with no social media that
time. No social media, no Twitter, no... Imagine if you had Twitter or Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram Live.
Instagram Live.
Insane.
It's crazy. So his marketing was crazy. But in that exile time, he was out here, you know, speaking and whatnot. But really and truly, the man wanted to get back into fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the men that helped him with that was Joe Frazier.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, and it's an interesting part in the book where they've got a long drive.
That was an amazing part of the book.
Yeah, I think that's what you told me the first time.
Yeah.
When we was off to record a podcast, he was like, you know, that conversation they had. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting, you know, to have two rivals, just them, in the car, traveling.
And not just rivals, in the arena of boxing, at a time when boxing is at such a high, and like these guys are physical monsters that want to rip each other apart in the ring. But they just go on a, six-hour drive?
6-hour drive.
From where was it? I don't know. Was it Atlanta to New York or something?
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Like, just, that's me finding my biggest op.
Yeah.
Saying, come, let's have a chat.
Yeah.
And then we'll just drive to, like, Scotland.
Yeah.
And then we'll just talk about out the whole time. And then he writes the whole script, like, almost, like, play-by-play.
Yeah.
In his autobiography, and it's just so interesting, man.
Yeah, and even in there, he's like, you know, I'll whoop
You know, there must be a couple times where they're like, I'm gonna open the door right now. Stop the car.
No, but that's wild. He's telling you, yeah, you know, I'll whoop you and this and that, and you've got a right that's a bit too twitchy, and I'll get under that.
Analyzing each other's games.
Yeah, he's telling you that exactly.
But Frazier's holding his own.
Yeah, he would. But even then, it was kind of a weird. And then he would also give him like other stuff. He'd be like, this, nah, listen, you've got to be able to build yourself up more. You've got to, giving him techniques on how to market and how to all do this kind of stuff. It's like, you're not outspoken enough. You need to speak more. You need to tell these guys what you're going to do. You know, I mean, and
literally advising each other. It's not just Muhammad Ali, like, telling him, like, this is how you should do things. Frazier's also, like, giving him his insights as well. It was very interesting.
And I don't think you come across that.
Unprecedented.
Yeah. But the crazy thing is that he said, and they came together to say, was that that they couldn't be friends in the eyes of people, because otherwise the fight wouldn't sell. They had to look like they bloody hated each other. And then eventually, that's who Muhammad Ali used to get back into the ring, by staging that thing. And then he was like, if people see how much, you know, that this fight can be worth and how much money there is, they'll give me back my license. And then eventually, long story short, after the time happened, there was a mayor that backed him. It was like, yeah, let's give him a fight. And then he had to have a few training bouts to sort himself out. Yeah. But I think there's many other things as well to kind of go into, but what I wanted to kind of know was like some key points from him that you felt like you could take away.
I thought there were so many. Like, this is one of the most interesting like autobiographies.
Yeah.
Like, I say Malcolm X is a great autobiography, and when I first read the Muhammad Ali book, I told you straight away, I was like, I think this one edges Malcolm X, and you know, I read that book highly, you know?
Yeah.
So like, there's so many interesting things, like his early years, or just like him describing all of those things in detail, was just so poignant to me, because like the fact that his dad was a painter, that's such an interesting thing.
Yeah.
His dad was a painter. He's going around door to door painting things, and they were so poor, like they had leaks in their roofs and stuff, and talking about how like one of his first contracts was like double the sum of money that his dad had put a mortgage on for their house.
Like
all of these different things, and like how his dad didn't want him to be a boxer because his dad didn't want him to be a painter, even though he had a bit of a creative eye. He said like he could paint a little. He said he considered a career in like working in publishing or something like that. And then his dad was like, nah, you're more talented, you're bright, you're shrunk. And then he also talked about how there was like, even at the early years, the media was saying, oh, they were trying to put division in between him and his family, like saying his dad didn't attend his fights, but in reality, his dad attended all of his fights, he said. Yeah. Stuff like that, it was just so interesting to me. Mm. And like, I think the backing of his family, like early years, it just goes to show how having a good, strong family background can support you in so many different ways. Yeah. And like, the other thing, his first contract first contract offered to him was by the policeman who first took him into boxing. Mm. $75 a week for 10 years. Is what he was offered. And his dad was like, ain't no way my son's getting sold for $75 a week for 10 years.
That's ridiculous.
But I did the calculation. So I think it was in the 60s.
Yeah.
So to convert it now would be about $780 a week.
Yeah.
Which isn't that bad, you know. It's 40K basically, $40,000 a year.
Okay.
If it's converted to this time.
Yeah.
But then again, for 10 years.
For 10 years, that's his whole career.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that like saved him? Because he was like, I was thinking about it.
Yeah, he was actually thinking because he was just like money and he's
like, my family need help. Like, I'm going to decline this big offer. And then, his dad was just like, had a strong word like to say for a lot of things, and I think that early years were the most impactful to me.
Mm.
And then later on, like him talking about like the brutality of boxing, like the fact that the punches were so hard, and at a heavyweight level the guys were so strong, hitting them was causing him to have like arthritis and stuff, his fingers were mashed up,
chips
his bones
and stuff,
like, that's insane. But like him breaking all of that down, and like all the ups and downs, and like just so many insights he's just given around how to be a successful person, as successful as he was. And like, even
this man was fighting in and out the ring.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that was like the one fight that he had, like he said, like it's just funny how he predicted a lot of things, because in his mind he's like, I need to do this to achieve this, I need to do this to achieve this. And like, there's the fight, there was a young guy called Corky, who's like the big, like he's like the neighborhood rough guy. He's like, you can't walk into this guy's neighborhood without him taxing you.
Yeah.
He's like, I gotta beat this guy. before I can call myself serious in the ring, innit? Yeah. And then he basically staged a fight. The other guy was a barman. He was a security guard at a bar or something. Yeah. He's like, let's go at it right now, innit, if you want it. And then people were like, no, let's get him in the ring and then fight. Yeah. And then he beat the guy's ass because he was playing. He was boxing in an orthodox way. The guy wanted to street fight, innit? So he's like, this isn't fair. He ran out. So like all these different stories that Muhammad Ali's talking about, how he's setting himself targets from a young age, like, I gotta be this guy to get here, I gotta be this guy to get here. And like just the fact that he says it, he does it, goes out to achieve it, and he does it. But along the way he's going through all these little shenanigans, like the gold, he finds out the gold medal thing's a sham. And like he's like, yo, like, why am I doing all this for this country? They can't even give me real gold.
That's a good point.
And like there's another thing where it was what's it, Emmett Till. He talks about Emmett Till, and he's like, I was the same age as him at the time. Then after that, like, I was like, I need to have my own. He said, like, I need to have my own revenge, and he went and I don't know what he did.
No, he
smashed something up.
Something like oncoming train. Or something like that.
Yeah, basically they went and basically he set something on a train track that the train would crash basically. And then he was walking away, he saw like the Uncle Sam sign saying, we want you to fight for America. And at the end of that, he was like, I knew there would be a point where Uncle Sam would confront me, and I've got to confront Uncle Sam. And I was like, yo,
that's crazy foreshadowing.
He's spitting, isn't it? So yeah, like all of these things, man, it's just like, I thought they're just an amazing character, honestly. I really, really enjoyed reading. I already knew about obviously his greatness, but
I think it's different when you read about it.
Yeah, when it's broken down this way.
Broken, yeah.
Is it very impressive.
As poetically as it was done.
Another thing I'll just end on, like, from that question you asked. The other thing, interesting thing about, like, the actual boxing, I didn't know, like, they have these sparring partners that are, like, actual, like, solid. I thought, like, they have sparring partners who they'll just keep them fit and all that, but these guys were like out to get them as well.
Because these guys also want to kind of have a name as well.
Yeah, they want to make a name for themselves because there's professional sparring partners that make money from actually like just going into the gym and fighting with the big boys. But like these guys are like, maybe they could have been professional in another life, or they could have been the world champions, but they just had something missing. Like maybe they didn't have enough pace, or maybe they're a bit injured. And he's talking about how one time, one guy, like before one of his fights, one of the sparring partners bruised his rib, like to the point where he might have broken it or something. And then he's wondering, should I fight or not? I thought that was very interesting. But yeah, the main thing for me, like his passion for people. There was a time when he got a new trainer. He had his training camp in the mountains, remember?
Yeah.
And then he was like, it was good, like it was going well, and like he was learning a lot of new things. But he felt like he didn't feel empowered, because he feels more empowered by being around the people. Wow. He's like, I'll be with my people. I want them to see me train. I want to be talking trash and like hyping myself up.
Yeah.
Like he really embodied the spirit of his character and his charisma and like the way he wants to market himself.
Yeah.
So I thought, all of these things were just so interesting to me. Yeah.
No, I think to touch on the focus, my parts, my takeaways as well was very much so kind of linked into some of the people part. Mm-hmm. Where he was talking about where he was one of his last fights. So he's fighting Joe Frazier. Not Joe Frazier, sorry, George Foreman. And George Foreman at this point is like the A side because Muhammad Ali's been out the game a bit and blah blah blah. So he's taken like his sweet time. Usually Muhammad Ali would make people wait. His coaches would be like, yeah, look, see that champion's making you wait. Wait. But now this guy was difficulty. But we are back now. You know, like I said, we're fasting, all right, gotta take it easy, us. So I wanted to kind of get on to my little takeaways as well from this to kind of also wrap it up. But I think the main thing for me was I was always allured by the mentality of champions. You know, you hear this, oh, you got to be a champion, you got to be a fighter, all this kind of stuff here. And then I had my own kind of theories about it. Some of them were like phrases or certain stuff that, like guys like Ronaldo, for example, would drop, or like even McGregor, where he was like, you have to be obsessed with this thing, you know, you gotta have an obsession, it's gotta be that level of you like it enough compared to how much they like it is.
It has to be higher, simple as that.
Absolutely. Like guys like Ronaldo that sacrificed his whole like childhood, not childhood, teenagehood, all of this stuff,
15 years
eating
old,
the right stuff. To just literally become the best player in the world. So it makes only sense why he's there. But there was a quote that he said that I had to write down from his perspective, because what he was saying was that champions initially aren't all made in the gym. and this was when he was about to have a fight against Foreman. He was in the mountains, you know. And he was like, what he would do is he would start counting the distances that he's running after it starts to hurt. Because if he's able to run that far without anything, without feeling anything, then he's basically done nothing.
Yeah.
But if when he's it starts hurting, yeah, he's in his comfort zone. But when it starts to hurt, then he's like, that would actually give me extra stamina in the ring. So it all kind of leads up, you know. But he was like, at the end of the day, champions aren't made in a gym. They are made deep inside, a desire, a dream, a vision. You know, they have to have last minute stamina. They have to be able to be a little bit faster, a little bit more skill. They have to have the will, and the will must be stronger than the skill. Many fighters have lost to less skilled fighters who had the will. No, many fighters have lost to less skilled fighters who had the will to win. Determined to keep fighters... sorry, my handwriting is killing me. Yeah, I've got a doctor's handwriting. determined fighters or champions are discoverers. You know, it's about understanding basically what is within themselves in that ability. When he's talking about also getting knocked down, and he describes it as a room that not a lot of people have been in, where all this kind of craziness is happening, and there's like monkeys playing like guitars, and the way he describes it is like a Alice in Wonderland kind of place. Where he's like, when you get knocked down, you're in between being half awake, half not. You're in that state, and then some people are able to rise up from that, and then some people are able to like just stay on the canvas and then have the count. And I don't know, that really inspired me, because it was kind of like it's in the reps in which the champions are made. It's kind of like, how many times can you take failing? Mm-hmm. You know, how many times can you take hits? Mm-hmm. And then when you do take that, what do you have inside you that's able to get you above that to the next level? Mm-hmm. When he's like, all this stuff where you see in movies, coaches saying, no, hit the left jab, hit the right jab, all this kind of stuff here. It kind of helps, but really and truly, the fight has to have the mentality and the will for it, otherwise it just won't succeed. It's kind of like footballers, you see how many that go downhill. If it's not in them to actually want to do it, at the end of the day, you're never going to do it. And it kind of also, the other stuff we talked about in another episode of what's holding you back, sometimes it's that extra part, you know what I mean? It's that digging through, okay, this didn't work out, but do I have that sole focus to get to the top, basically? And that's what the champions have. And I think for me, that was the best
biggest takeaway.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I'd love to get into the mind of champions and see how they think about certain stuff, you know?
Yeah, so I actually like reading autobiographies. I think it's very interesting. There's a Mike Tyson one I actually want to read. So that'll be an interesting one.
That'll be a good one as well. I don't know if it'll be as eloquent as my boy Muhammad.
Listen, man, it's not me with his autobiography.
Yeah, that is true.
This is Mayweather because of his support.
No, absolutely, Zionism. Absolutely. Yeah, him, he's cats.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Muhammad Ali would say about him in this day and age.
Goodness me.
He needs to get his ass whooped.
But no, like I said, so Muhammad Ali, probably the most one of the charismatic guys, probably clearly a big figure to a lot of people. Now, obviously, for our inspired community and our inspired folk. Do you feel like he's part of productive...
aesthetic productivity? Yeah, actually.
You think?
Yeah.
I think he's on the borderline that we like, but from afar.
No. We like...
He'll whip you into shape.
It's like, you know, there's a lot of... what people do nowadays, like their football player, they want them to win like player of the month, so to get the most votes, what they do. Mm-hmm. Like Taylor Swift, they add Taylor Swift and say like, Taylor Swift, he's a Swiftie. You got to support him. Muhammad Ali, he's aesthetic productivity.
I don't know, man.
Nah, when you think about aesthetic productivity, the essence of it is like where you know he says, "I'm pretty."
Yeah,
I'm still on
the
come on, man.
You know what?
That's the essence of aesthetic productivity.
Yeah, but
he's saying, "I'm gonna beat your ass. I'm gonna still talk crap, and I'm gonna still look good.
I'm gonna do it while I'm look good."
Yeah, exactly. So who else embodies the spirit?
I still understand, but I don't know. I'm going to have to leave him on a 50-50.
Nah. He's aesthetic and he's productive.
No, he's...
Put them together, that's it.
Yeah.
But it's the formula.
Is it the nice, you know, pastel colours and the matcha?
So, man, these, man,
If you saw you having a matcha,
he'll sit down and have one with me.
You think?
Yeah.
Nah, I tell you, come on, we'll run.
Nah.
I know you don't want to run at 5 a.m. in the morning up a mountain.
If his mom's already told me to do that, I'm doing it.
Yeah, I'm gonna be on the fence about that.
Nah, if Muhammad Ali tells you, come outside, let's go for a run.
Yeah, nah, you're going.
You're not going.
Just because it's Muhammad Ali, nah, 100%. I'll do it for 5 minutes, just to say I've done it.
And then back to Austin.
Then it's bam, then I don't know the guy. I leave him be. But okay. Yeah. So, yeah, pretty much that's all we've got on Mr. Muhammad Ali.
Next thing, like, We're out of juice. But yeah, it's a Ramadan special.
That is.
We're doing this just after iftar.
Yeah.
We're well fed and watered, but you know how it is after you eat like that.
Yeah.
Difficult to talk. But yeah.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure. What a wonderful book and a wonderful character.
Yeah, and you guys should definitely check it out. We'll leave it all in the links and the descriptions and all that kind of stuff below for you guys to check it out. And like I said, as always, like, share, subscribe, you know, all of that kind of stuff does very, very much help the boys out, you know, and to join us on this aesthetic proactive journey as we go through more different people and different books and all of that good jazz. So as always, we shall see you guys in the next one. That's it.
Let's go.
That's it.